And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your co-host, Ryan Burns. And yes, we will initially apologize to start things off here. We do know this podcast is late. It's Wednesday here as we are recording this. We know that's far too late for you listeners, and you're not used to that as everybody's on a schedule. But we will try and make that up to you with this podcast and then a couple tomorrow. So joining me to break down this 24-20 Bison victory as co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things for your Timber Pups? I know you were down at the game last night.
Yeah, I got a chance to spend some time with a friend of mine who works for the university, a huge Bison fan, big Wolves fan. Got to go to the first game in the Target Center. Had a lot of fun. Zach Levine, one of my favorite guys, played pretty well. Fun to watch, certainly. But as you mentioned, our schedules didn't link up great this week. Got this UNI review pod out to the good people a little bit late. But we're going to make it up for it, as you mentioned. Probably a three-podcast week, as we should get you guys a Youngstown State preview and then a basketball preview after I take in the exhibition game tonight against Concordia.
Yeah, so let's start things off on the episode here with a new segment. Obviously, we're at the press conference earlier this week. What did you learn from Coach Kleiman?
Just some, you know, injury stuff. Certainly a different press conference than when the Target Field game was announced. I don't think there's any question about that. Jalen Wimbush had an arm injury in that game against Northern Iowa. He was unavailable for the rest of that game. Kleiman appeared to believe that Wimbush would be available for Youngstown State, which is good news, but at the same time, Quentin McCoy certainly seems to be developed depth at that position, which is always good. King Frazier, I'm not as sure on. He had a rib or a cartilage issue. I think he kind of landed on the ball, it seemed like, and was not available for the rest of the UNI game. Lance Dunn became the primary feature back. You saw that was maybe an issue in some of the more short yardage situations. So I'd be interested to see if Frazier would be available this week. And then Zach Johnson had to go out for a few plays, and they use Zach Zimmer in his stead there. They also got little Zach Johnson a few snaps just to give, I think, probably Colin Connor a little bit of break, but also to develop Zach and give him some game reps in an important situation, which they certainly had at UNI needing a victory.
So a couple more questions on some guys. Well, again, you touched on Jalen Wimbush and whatnot, but are there any other injuries that you think that even a guy like Bruce Anderson, do you think he could be back for the game this weekend, or what do you think?
It didn't seem like Coach Kleiman expected Bruce to be back. I thought, you know, maybe a week away, though, so potentially get him one or two games before the playoff push would start. I think that the win over Northern Iowa probably secured NDSU a spot in the playoffs, though far away from any type of goals that a program of NDSU's caliber at this point would have set. But I don't think we're going to get Bruce back. But there is a running back that might return this week, Damaris Purifoy, a guy that got a little bit of work in that first conference game that was sort of a blowout, and a redshirt freshman that they're pretty excited about, a bigger back than Lance Dunn and Bruce Anderson, certainly from the Milwaukee area, and a guy that they are really high on. Could probably take some of those A-gap power and outside G runs that you would normally have King Frazier take if King is not available, and then, you know, would maintain the ability to use Lance Dunn as more of a change of pace speed type of guy, which certainly suits his athletic talents, no question about it. So Purifoy, a guy that they might have back. And then just to sort of get some things, and I mean, I understand where Kleiman's coming from. He was really ticked about the performance on special teams against UNI. I think Jalen Rima is, you know, kind of a world-class sprinter. He's really a fast athlete that could have gone anywhere he wanted in the Big Ten to run track, wanted to play football. Ended up at UNI. I know, as well as you do, that he was a player that was part of NDSU's recruiting efforts a season ago, ended up going to UNI. They're using him right away as a true freshman, as a return man, and he is having a Bruce Anderson-like impact on that team. So I understand the questions with special teams, but they're going to try and get some guys out there. Daniel Polanski, Aaron Merkidal, even Eric Perkins, who would be a guy that they can use in coverage with the cast while he waits for his thumb to get better so that he can return to being NDSU's return man. Those are guys that I think that the staff is going to try and get involved a little bit in this late season on the special teams to sort of shore some things up while some of the starters are also trying to get healthy.
Let's talk a little bit of equipment news. I believe that there's going to be some returning of uniforms from the previous seasons this weekend. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not. And I was kind of hoping, I tweeted about it, made kind of a joke, but the in media day, the team was allowed to screw around a little bit with some color combinations, and you'll even see like Pierre G. Tucker wore, I think, the home yellow pants with the white jersey and the Harvest helmet. I really liked the look that Nate Tangway was sporting with the road jersey, the Harvest helmet, and the green pants. I thought that that was something that maybe they could utilize in an actual game setting. But Coach Kleiman made a huge point of emphasis this week. In the Western Illinois game, when they threw a late interception that kind of meant that NDSU was going to win the game, you saw this look of relief on the faces of the Bison players and just kind of their attitude of sort of dodging a bullet and really treating this season like a job because of the tremendous expectations that fans, coaches, and players alike put on this NDSU program to win a national championship and a conference championship every single season. I mean, all those other schools have scholarship athletes too. So the emphasis really this week was on having fun. And I think that that is certainly an important distinction. I think it's something that it's good that the staff is harping on these kids to enjoy themselves and appreciate what they get to do every weekend. And I think the uniform change is a part of that. He mentioned, every little thing helps. And getting to put on these Harvest helmets that these kids really think are cool, I think, is part of getting to have a little bit more fun this season and playing a little bit looser. It's, I talked a number of years ago with a fullback that played at North Dakota State, and he ended up winning three championships and just made mention of how glad he was to graduate so that his class wasn't the class that gave up the streak. And at that point, it was only three. Now it's five, and I understand the tremendous weight that entails. So these uniforms and the fancy helmets and stuff like that, it's cool for recruiting, but it's also cool to kind of lighten up the mood, and any little thing helps.
So let's switch and talk a little bit of Bison basketball. You are going to be heading over to campus here in almost less than 90 minutes here now, but there's a multitude of things you'll be heading over there for tonight. So why don't you explain to folks what they can expect here in the next 10 hours in the life of Ross Uglum.
Yeah, they're going to do a little bit of a media get-together thing with also some invited guests. They're going to do a ribbon cutting. President Bashani will speak. Matt Larson, the athletic director, will speak. A.J. Jacobson, Fargo native, Bison star, will speak. And they're going to allow us, the media, to take pictures and take video and check out the new facility. Listen to, of course, the words that Bashani and Larson and Jacobson have to share and just kind of get ready for the season and see what is going to happen in this new era of Bison basketball with these wonderful facilities. Most of us, in the media have at least been around the BSA. I never had to cover anything there. The first year that I was involved with the Bison Report, they were in the Shields Arena in South Fargo, but this is a return to campus and hopefully a return to a few more students at the games and higher attendance and just a better overall feel for Bison basketball. So that's very exciting stuff. And then there will be an exhibition game against Crosstown. I wouldn't call them a rival. They're Division III, my alma mater, Concordia. Concordia College will take on the Bison in an exhibition game. That's a game, actually, that will allow North Dakota State to play anybody that it wants without having to burn a red shirt. So they are going to, you know, be able to play whomever they want. You're going to get a chance to see Cameron Hunter tonight. You're going to get a chance to see Cameron Ward. You'll probably get to see Jared Samuelson play as well. So if you're, you know, in the area, I don't think the game is sold out yet, being an exhibition game, and you want to check out the new digs, 7 o'clock against Concordia. Should be fun. It might also be your only chance to see some of those freshmen this season. I have a prediction as far as redshirting, but I'd like to see how the rotations go in this game against Concordia before I provide that, and that'll probably be tomorrow during the basketball preview podcast. So you guys will have to tune in for that for sure, because I have an idea that they might be using one of the two scholarship athletes this season after the loss of Malik Clements.
Look at you, giving the folks something to look forward to tomorrow. Look at that. So let's switch back to football, and let's talk about those professional Bison football players. Carson Wentz loses a tough one in overtime to the Cowboys. It just didn't work out for the Eagles in overtime, but he did manage to set a record in that performance as well.
Yeah, tough loss. That's a pretty good Cowboys team. I would say with the complete meltdown that's occurring in Minneapolis at this point, the Cowboys would have to be at least loosely considered the NFC favorite. I don't see Seattle being the favorite with as poor as their offensive line is. There's obviously very serious offensive line issues in Minnesota, and half of Green Bay's starters are either on injured reserve or just on the Sunday daily inactive list. Green Bay actually didn't have a healthy scratch during the Atlanta game, which is something that every team basically has during the course of the season. Somebody is inactive because they aren't wanted, not because it's all hands on deck. But I would say that the Cowboys are probably at this point the best team in the NFC, at least the most complete team. And for Carson to go down in prime time and force overtime, I think, was an impressive feat. But yeah, as you mentioned, already here as we sit in week 8, Carson Wentz is the all-time leader in touchdown passes for a Philadelphia Eagles rookie. So impressive stuff, of course, from Carson. And, I think we certainly at the Bison Report believe, and a lot of Fargoans believe, that it's going to be a long and productive career for Wentz in Philadelphia. So congratulations to Carson, I guess. C.J. Smith, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you about different guys like Kyle Emanuel, Joe Haig, Marcus Williams. Curious how they did this past weekend.
Sure. C.J. Smith, also an Eagle, dressed for the first time, did not see any game action. All three of the guys that you mentioned, though, Emanuel, Williams, and Haig, earned starts for their team. Haig, maybe not such a surprise just because Indianapolis is so very bad on the offensive line. But, Marcus Williams had some real serious NFL corners to deal with at the beginning of the season for his starting position. And I don't think anybody thought, with the two edge rushers in Tauchu and Melvin Ingram, I was going to say Melvin Gordon, but it's Melvin Ingram. Those two edge rushers that San Diego has, no one really foresaw Kyle Emanuel being a starter there either. But he was able to get another start and play pretty well. No real serious, I guess, statistics of note for Kyle or Marcus. Joe, obviously, an offensive lineman. But down in the lower levels of the NFL team, I guess you would call a special teamer, Ramon Humber, I want to make mention of specifically. He's really doing a great job on specials. He's made a career of that. He is the number one guy for special team snaps on the Buffalo Bills. A Buffalo season that's going pretty well, not necessarily what happened to them against New England, but decent year for the Bills, and I think Ramon Humber's contributions on special teams are certainly a part of that. And as far as primetime Bison, you know, I always try to make mention of which guys you'll be able to see if you don't have NFL Sunday Ticket. Not much. You're going to be able to see Carson probably just because the Fargo media has done such a good job of basically acquiring the rights to all the Eagles games. And then Ramon Humber and the Bills are on Monday Night Football. Otherwise, everybody else is at noon or 3. Ryan, what have you got for recruiting time with Ryan Burns?
Well, I'm hoping to have more for either one of the podcasts tomorrow. But the thing worth noting right now is that NDSU will have their top offensive line target on campus on Saturday in Kearney's Rudy Stouffer, someone that they offered just after their camps got finished. He's someone that they really want for that final offensive line spot. They really don't have any other offers out to offensive linemen. So I think that's an indication of how good this Bison football staff feels about their chances with Rudy, and just in terms of how selective they are. And they just think that things are going well. So I'm hoping to have more names to talk about tomorrow. But Rudy is absolutely the headliner. It's an unofficial visit, which means he'll be able to come back in December or January for his official visit to Fargo. So that's pretty good news there. But Ross, let's switch back to Northern Iowa. Let's talk about the Bison 24-20 victory. I mean, I think that anytime you can head down to Cedar Falls and get that kind of a game out of the way and emerge with a victory, I think you should think that it's a positive.
And I actually want to, before we do that, I will sneak in my little bit of recruiting knowledge. I happen to know that former athletic director Gene Taylor's son, Jared Taylor, a quarterback for Iowa City West, will be, maybe it's City High. Anyway, 6'5 kid, he'll be on his unofficial visit this weekend. So dipping kind of back into the Bison family tree, they've got a quarterback prospect up this weekend. So just wanted to add that. But yeah, let's dive into you and I.
So, North Dakota State jumps out to a 21-6 lead early in the third quarter, but they allow the Panthers to stick around, and that ends up being a 24-20 game. What did you think about this Bison team, just your general impressions?
You know, it's difficult to win on the road in the Valley, and I think that that's kind of the most important part. I feel like potentially some of Coach Kleiman's, I don't know if I want to call it annoyance, but, you know, his attitude about needing to have fun and dealing with expectations, it's really kind of toxic around North Dakota State fans right now for everything that this team has accomplished this season. Sort of tough to cover it and just see where expectations are and what it actually kind of takes to keep some of these people happy. I mean, yes, NDSU had a big lead in this game, but that's also sort of part of the story. I mean, the fact that they were able to get that lead in the first place is something that should be very impressive. Yes, you and I was 3-4, but that's still not a fun place to play in. And you know, we talked about throwing out the record. So I didn't expect NDSU to jump out to an advantage quite like that. But as has been the case, the running game just not able to get it done in the second half. NDSU largely unable to switch to any type of a passing offense with consistent success. Holding a lead via the pass is kind of always a questionable way of going about things anyway, but unable to complete a high percentage of passes or really a high threat of passes just as far as how far they were willing to kind of toss it down the field. I don't want to say the offense went into a shell because it's the same plays that have been called throughout the entire championship run. There's just not execution in the manner that we are used to, I guess, as fans and people that study or follow North Dakota State. And the other thing that I'll say is a little bit unimpressed with the pass rush as well. A lot of complaining, I think, from fans about you know, not blitzing enough and just continuing to rush four. That's a tenet of North Dakota State football as well, the ability to get pressure with four and cover with those linebackers. That's, you know, Travis Beck was not an excellent Bison linebacker because he blitzed. Travis Beck was an excellent Bison linebacker because he covered slot receivers and was still good against the run. And, you know, sometimes when you blitz, you end up in bad positions in the run game as well. You're far more susceptible to the screen game, which is something that was really a problem on Sunday. And so we need to get, or NDSU needs to get to a place where they're running the ball more effectively and rushing the passer with four more effectively, because the main cornerstones of that defense do not involve blitzing on every play. And so if they're going to hold leads against teams that are going to, you know, pass on every down when they get down, and that's just about every team, I mean, you throw the ball to get back into games, they're going to need to start getting more pressure with four, because this is not a this is not a Bison secondary that's going to be able to cover for 5 or 6 seconds, and very few are. But this is just historically not the best Bison secondary of all time, and so to put that kind of pressure on them is, you know, maybe not a great strategy.
So let's start with that secondary, and specifically Jalen Allison. When you look at the stat sheet for Northern Iowa, I mean, the name Darius Fountain isn't even on the stat sheet, as Jalen Allison absolutely put the clamps on, 5 total tackles and 2 pass breakups. What did you think from Jalen?
Yeah, just as I'm about to run down the defensive backs, you mentioned Jalen Allison, I think, has really taken a noticeable forward step since Jalen Wimbush went down against South Dakota State. I believe that at that point, and I actually was standing about 15 feet away from Kleiman, and he yelled at Jalen, "Hey, go get 19. And that was it for the rest of the game. He followed Wenneke around, obviously gave up the game-winning touchdown for South Dakota State, but did a decent enough job on Wenneke, and then certainly raised his level of play against Lance Lenore, and then completely took Darius Fountain out of the game. So, you know, I think you'd agree, defensive back is maybe one of, I would say defensive back and maybe offensive tackle are two of the most mentally challenging parts of a football team, and the guys that I really think once they have the mental part of the game mastered, I think that has more effect on a corner and an offensive tackle than really any other position, just because they are both on an island against the really high-end athletes on the other team. And once Kleiman basically told Jalen Allison that he was a shutdown corner, Jalen Allison became a shutdown corner, and that's a huge development for this Bison staff. I don't know if he's a shutdown corner in the sense of you leave him alone like you used to leave C.J. Smith alone and then just kind of play 10 guys against the rest of the offense. He might just be a shutdown corner in the sense of being able to execute his part of the defense on every play. But if he can get closer to that point where they really do have a shutdown corner like they had with Marcus, like they had with CJ, it could be a huge strategic advantage for NDSU moving forward in the playoffs, because it is so much easier to play a 10-on-10 when you can take away the other team's top receiver.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this defensive line again. I know that you weren't too happy with their play overall, but can we talk about that hit that Brad Ambrosius absolutely de-cleated? That was absolutely absurd.
Yeah, I'm looking, I guess, maybe for more interior pass rush, or I don't know what I'm looking for, I guess. More consistent pass rush. It's not all about sacks, but you're right. Brad Ambrosius was extremely impressive. If you guys had a chance to read the game film review, I kind of called out Brad Ambrosius 2 articles ago where I hadn't seen much from him. I am fully aware of the fact that he doesn't probably read that article. I'm even more aware of the fact that he probably doesn't care at all what I have to say. But that was quite an answer. I mean, to any criticism, it was a fantastic sack. He played well all game long, completely shut down the run, basically, to the strong side of the formation for you and I. They didn't really get a sniff. And I was just impressed from Brad all game long. I really thought that was his best game of the season and something certainly for Bison fans to look forward to for the rest of the year.
Another secondary guy that we're going to have to talk about because obviously he's the conference player of the week. Trey Dempsey, two interceptions, one pass breakup, a tackle for loss, and four total tackles, excuse me. Trey Dempsey might have played his best game of the season.
Yeah, that was, you know, really impressive. That tackle for loss specifically was super impressive. Multi-interception games are so rare for defensive backs. I know that that's something that was really important to Trey and really cool to see him have that level of success. He's a guy that I really think has done a lot for the team, moving from more of a premium position at cornerback and taking over basically the entire secondary at that free safety position. I just have a tremendous amount of respect for Trey, and he had a monster game. I mean, he was all over the place and was, you know, pretty obviously going to get all of the press clippings this week with the way that box score went. I just didn't want to gloss over what Jalen Allison did because I don't think he had a very good statistical game. Not something that would show up in the box score, but to take away Fountain, I thought was something that needed to be mentioned. But you got to mention what Trey Dempsey did on Saturday as well.
We were talking in the pre-production meeting about Greg Menard and how he hasn't had that hat trick sack game in terms of that blow-up game, but he is consistently putting up games with a sack after sack after sack. I think he is the model of consistency for this Bison defensive line.
Yeah, you listen to coaches talk about, you know, pass rushing, and a lot of the times, you know, when a pass rusher has had a slow start to the season, one of the media quips that a defensive coordinator or a defensive line coach will tell you is that, you know, sacks come in bunches, pass rushing comes in bunches. It's something certainly that I think Dom Capers said about Clay Matthews a few seasons ago when he was struggling. And I just, it's funny because that's actually something that I believe. I think that it's pass rushing's also a very mental game. And when you get hot, you get hot. I think you certainly saw Greg Menard get hot last year in Brookings. But, yeah, I think every game, at least half a sack, every game I think actually a full sack except one, was talking to another Bison fan right before this game just about what, you know, he was actually one of the guys complaining about the lack of blitzing and, well, I just don't think the defensive line has played the same way. And I said, it's because of the lack of a monster game. Greg Menard gets a sack every single game. He just hasn't had that that highlight game where he has, you know, three sacks and four tackles for loss and a fumble forced. I think it might be coming. I mean, there's no question about that. But if NDSU plays 15 games this season and Greg Menard ends up with 15 and a half sacks, that's still an All-American campaign. It just maybe wasn't as flashy as you might have liked it to be.
All right, let's talk a little bit of offense now, and let's switch back to a little bit of a touchy position in terms of the passing game. Easton Sticks Day, 8 of 16, 50% completion percentage, 118 yards, one touchdown through the air, and two interceptions. What is the state of this passing game right now? And I know you already kind of touched on it a little bit, but it doesn't sound like Coach Kleiman's exactly thrilled with what's going on there.
No, and I think you might see an emphasis on it this week against Youngstown State. Youngstown State has a very athletic front seven, maybe not one that you want to run against as often as you might against other squads. Just a team that's going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage, and if NDSU can win some outside matchups, that'll be a positive, certainly. But 8 for 16, 16 attempts, very hard to get into a rhythm. Two of those those eight that weren't completed, though, were interceptions. And I think that's really where the problem is. I have absolutely no problem with the first interceptions. That was a rollout. He made a guy miss and was continuing to roll towards the sideline, had all the time in the world to try and hit a big play down the field. Underthrew his receiver a little bit. RJ almost took the ball away from the defensive back, but I think that thing went 50 yards in the air and you know, went about as well as any punt you would ever would have. So I don't really have a huge issue with that part of things, but I'd like to see Easton Stick get into a little bit more rhythm. I'd just like to see him play with a little bit more confidence when he's out on the field. I know he's a very confident kid. The staff, Kleiman specifically, mentioned just how much confidence they have in him, but I'm not seeing a lot of Stick hitting his drop and getting the ball out. He is waiting for guys to be super open, and I think maybe trying to be a little bit too perfect, something that Kleiman actually specifically mentioned in his press conference, that he felt like Easton was trying to be a little bit too perfect. I think it's something, you know, that will improve as the running game improves. I think the play action game will improve quite a bit. There's a lot of gimmicks to NDSU's passing attack too. I mean, that the wheel route, all the fake stuff that happens in the inverted wishbone set, all the fake jet sweep stuff that they do. It's not super pro set, pro style type stuff. So it is hard sometimes to get into a rhythm, and it's honestly hard for me to evaluate it as well. It's very college-esque, the passing game, for as pro-style as NDSU's run attack is. Their passing game is pretty unconventional, at least, you know, to what I have been trained to watch. So I can't give a really good evaluation of what's going on, but I would just like to see Easton get into a little bit more of a rhythm, maybe a few more first and second down passing plays as opposed to, you know, kind of always running a gap power on first down, and then a few more deep shots down the field, design deep shots. There weren't many last week. The one was one of those NFL throws, the throw that he hit over the middle, you know, to the side of the safety and over the linebackers was NFL quality. It was an unbelievable throw, went probably 35 yards in the air. Very, very impressive stuff, and something I'd like to see a little bit more. But yeah, there's no one. I don't think there really is one issue with the passing game at this point. Everybody just needs to pick their game up a little bit.
So let's switch to the Northern Iowa passing game, because you look at what their quarterback was able to do: 20 of 39 for 216 yards, two touchdowns, but four interceptions. I mean, do you want to put that more on the quarterback or the Bison defensive backs in the front seven getting pressure? Or what do you think about a four-interception game from this Bison defense?
Just a young quarterback, I think, going through some growing pains. I would really call it a two-interception game. I think that the one that he threw to Robbie was pretty darn egregious, and the second interception wasn't great either. But the game-losing pick, I guess you would probably call it, that was really... I have a hard time putting that one on him. Tyvus Smith had a chance to make a play on that ball and kind of tipped it up with one hand, which is just never good for the offense. Matt Plank was able to basically basket catch that thing. And then the last interception was, you know, on a Hail Mary type situation where they were trying to get something going, and he threw it right to Trey. Not trying to take anything away from Dempsey, certainly, but I just felt like, as four interception games go, that was, you know, not very Ryan Fitzpatrick of him. That just sort of happened. But he's a young QB and somebody certainly that I think, you know, NDSU is going to have to deal with moving forward. But that's okay because of how young NDSU's secondary is. It's going to be the same guys going after Dunn. It's not like they are going to graduate a bunch of guys and have freshmen going against Dunn in his senior season. But certainly Eli Dunn, a player that I would anticipate you and I having a lot of success through the air with as we kind of move forward.
So let's talk about that running attack for them. 26 attempts, 68 yards, only a 2.6 yards per carry, but they were able to move the ball a little bit on the ground in the second half. What were your overall impressions from this run defense?
Dominant. I mean, I would have to look at the play-by-play part of the box score from that fourth quarter. I think most of what they got were in a couple of burst runs in the fourth quarter. I think that they were huddling around 1, 1.5 yards a carry for most of the competitive balance of that game. Really an impressive job by the NDSU run defense, and something that I expected, something we talked about in the preview show, that if Aaron Bailey wasn't going to be a part of things, them handing the ball off to Tyvus Smith and in a conventional manner was just not going to be a successful part of the offense, and it really wasn't. I mean, they completely took it away. It was not going to be something that was able to get yards for you and I. They had to throw the ball on every down, and they had enough success doing that to score 20 points, and that's about it.
A couple of names I want to throw at you here that could maybe potentially be helping this offense. Again, that's why I want to ask your opinion about it, but do you think Ty Brooks or Damaris Purifoy could be potentially guys in this offense that could have a role, or what do you think about the status of those two guys here for the rest in the remainder of the season?
I mean, it's funny, certainly, that we're talking about running back depth, considering where we sort of started this season. We felt like four very capable guys. Well, two of them are unavailable, and the other one's playing fullback. I mean, that's kind of where NDSU's at in this season, so the two kids that redshirted last year, they might ask something of them, and they did ask Ty Brooks to take, you know, the kickoff return duties as Bruce Anderson's not healthy and ready to go, and as long as he didn't get his scholarship pulled for that gaffe inside the 5-yard line that Kleiman again pointed out in the press conference, I think he might be a part of the offense. He got to play at least one snap of offense. I did notice that. Got to play in that inverted wishbone set, that three-back set. Didn't get the ball. I think Lance Dunn ended up with the ball on that play. But certainly a guy, I think, that has the ability to be in that Lance Dunn change of pace mold, that Bruce Anderson mold, maybe not the King Frazier mold. That would be more of the Morris. And I think that Purifoy is actually the player that really has the chance to play on Saturday if King can't go, if Purifoy is ready. Might get a few carries here and there in more of the traditional Bison stuff, the A-gap power, off-tackle stuff, the outside G, things of that nature, and just to try and get the offense going a little bit without having to overwork Lance Dunn.
Another spot I want to ask you about is the right guard position. How happy have you been with the play there? And any chance you think that NDSU potentially makes a change?
I really don't think that there's a chance that NDSU makes a change. I just really have a lot of respect for Jack Plankers as a player. I just don't think he's a guard. I mean, he's 6'7", 320-odd pounds, maybe even up closer to 330, and just not the most agile human being there ever was. And I don't mean any disrespect by that. I just wish that there was a tackle spot open for the kid. I wish that he could move forward and push the point of attack, specifically right tackle. I mean, would be just a perfect spot for Jack. But Landon Leckler is such an impressive player. And it works fine when NDSU runs right and Jack and Landon push together. But on the stuff where they run left and Plankers is asked to pull, and not the like power pull where either guard, whether it's Zach or Jack, does that sort of shuffle thing and then moves up through the hole with the fullback. I'm talking about actual pulling left. He's just not fast enough to do it. The pulling pass protections that NDSU likes to run, he's not fast enough to do those either, really, and it's gotten Easton hit pretty hard from the blind side on a number of occasions this season. So just something, you know, if they can maybe work in Zimmer a little bit. Jack was more of a rotational guy last season, but I mean, I completely understand it. He is a good player. He's a talented player. He's a fifth-year senior. I understand why he's playing full-time. I just I have some struggles, X's and O's wise, in the ways that they use him.
Final question for you before we wrap things up for today is an embarrassment of riches question. And that's, what do you think about the linebacker position for next season? Can DeLuca and Plank play together, or is this something that you think is going to be a little bit of an issue, or where do you stand on that right now?
Well, I just wanted to talk about this because of how well Matt played against you and I. He was 1660. The Bison had Matt as one of their four choices for player of the game. I really think he's a talented kid. You heard in the interview that I did with Pierre G. Tucker what Pierre thinks of him. And it's just going to be difficult, I think, potentially next season for the Bison to say, hey, thanks for saving our asses last season. By the way, here are all your special teams duties because Nick DeLuca's back. And Nick DeLuca's a second or third round pick. The other part of it is that NDSU really likes a lot of their young outside linebackers. Dan Marlette, Jake Brinkman, Aaron Mercadel, Levi Jordan. They've got Chris Board. They've got plenty of guys that they like for those outside positions that to tell one of them that they have to wait another season to play. Like you said, embarrassment of riches. That's a great way to put it. I don't think that Matt Plank has the long speed to play MJ Stump's position. I don't really believe that to be a possibility. But I could see him fitting in at Sam and playing where Pierre G. Tucker plays. I think you could play Marlette, DeLuca, and Plank together next season in a Sam, Will, Mike configuration. But it's absolutely not up to me. It's completely up to the coaching staff. It's just a question that I'm excited as the season winds down or as the season maybe finishes to ask, but just not a question that's super appropriate this time, and that's why I haven't mentioned it to Coach Kleiman or really talked to any of the defensive coaches because I know how concerned they are about this season.
All right, so let's wrap it up here, Ross. Why don't you tell folks what they can expect here for the rest of the week or maybe even in the next week in terms of content?
Yeah, so this should drop about probably the same time as the ribbon-cutting ceremony is going on. We'll then provide a basketball preview podcast and a football preview for Youngstown State podcast sometime today, but I guarantee by tomorrow at noon you're going to have the full, you know, probably 3,000-plus word preview for basketball. And then I'm going to try and do one feature piece as well for football. I didn't get a chance this week, completely my fault, to interview any players. So there won't be like an interview with quotes, but maybe a deep dive into what's been going on for NDSU in the second halves of these last three games. I think that that's something to look at and analyze and maybe do a piece there. So lots of good content coming out from the Bison Report. Ryan, of course, will have his Behind Enemy Lines piece come out as well. Talk to a Youngstown State beat writer this week, so you can look forward to that. But other than that, I got to kind of get moving here.
Yeah, so let's get Ross out of here on time so he can head over to the ribbon cutting. So again, we'll have a couple of podcast recording sessions tomorrow, so we'll have a preview and a basketball preview as well. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.